Welcome to WISO Weekend, WYSO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, Nikki Dakota is back to tell us about WYSO's CD of the Month. Sarah Buckingham has tonight's Documentary Hour preview. We've got Bill Felker and Community Voices volunteer Caressa Brown. She speaks with poet Latessa Slate Williamson. Up first, there were several interesting stories out this week about Ohio's health and health care. This prompted our call to Brian Bucklew, President and CEO of the Greater Dayton Area Hospital Association, to talk about those issues and a bit more. Brian, thanks for speaking with me today. We've got just a couple of questions for you. The first story we'll talk about, that Ohio has fallen to 36th in the annual healthcare rankings nationwide. Can you explain a little bit about that situation?
Yeah, it's those statistics mirror what's happening here in the Dayton region. We have a high degree of quality with our hospitals and with our doctors in terms of outcomes. We're one of the highest. We're the highest in the state of Ohio. We're one of the highest in the entire country. But what we found out is that our overall population's health is declining. And a lot of that is due to chronic disease management, access to health care, making sure people have the ability to get in to see a specialist or a subspecialist or even a primary care physician to get treatment on an ongoing basis for their chronic diseases such as diabetes. And those are big cost drivers, both in terms of monetary, in terms of coming out of the people's pockets, and also for the healthcare system. But also, it impacts their health. Diabetes manifests itself in a lot of other different medical conditions that are very expensive to treat and need to be done on an ongoing basis instead of what we call an episodic basis, meaning that once a situation flares up, they go to the emergency room to get treatment. That's not the best way to deal with chronic disease such as diabetes. You need to get the ongoing treatment day in and day out.
I read somewhere that Minnesota currently spends roughly the same amount as Ohio on some healthcare initiatives, but they rank a little bit better. Is that correct?
Yeah, Minnesota has a little bit of a different healthcare system than the state of Ohio does. They're a clinic-based system, and so you have more medical homes up in Minnesota, which tend to get people to have a greater amount of ongoing care and preventative care and wellness care. But what we found out in Minnesota, and we're looking at Minnesota, is they came up with a diabetes protocol saying that if you do these, if you're a doctor and you do these 10 things, your patients are going to have better outcomes, lower mortality, lower morbidity than the amount of time that a person spends in the hospital. And what they found out is the best doctor in Minnesota 3 years ago had a 38% compliance rate from his patients. Now, that doctor today still has the highest rate in Minnesota, but it's only 50% compliance. And what we're finding out is that a lot of these issues dealing with health are lifestyle-based. So people are going to have to follow doctor's instructions. They're going to have to eat better. They're going to have to exercise better. And we're getting to a point with the chronic diseases you just can't take a pill and get better and get prescribed some medicine or have a surgery, a surgical procedure. Individuals are going to have to take a greater responsibility in maintaining their health and having better health outcomes.
So how do you do that? I mean, that message has been out there a while. What new initiatives could be enacted to help people move in that direction?
Well, it's a challenge. I think one way that is part of the federal health care reform, they're looking at revamping the way physicians, doctors, providers are paid. And instead of being paid on doing procedures, right now, doctors and hospitals and other health professionals get paid for doing things. There's no incentive, there's no financial incentive in the system to get people better, to keep them out of the health care system. So they're looking at different ways of payment, and they got these accountable care organizations and looking at doing bundled payments. I think that's one thing. The other thing is something that is being looked at in the state of Ohio. The head of the Ohio Department of Health, Dr. Ted Wimslow, who's from the Dayton region, is a big proponent of medical homes, is getting people into a medical home where they have access to a nurse and a doctor that they can call on an ongoing basis instead of getting the episodic treatment at an urgent care center or at an emergency room. Those types of things are going to have dramatic impacts. And, as people, as with healthcare reform, people are going to have a greater responsibility and are understanding the cost of healthcare and having a greater investment in healthcare, both in terms of financially and the decisions that they make. I think that will also motivate people to deal with the chronic disease management a lot better and find a medical home.
Is the Hospital Association involved in any of these initiatives?
Yes, we are, and we're working with the Ohio Department of Health on medical homes. We're actually working across what I would call jurisdictional lines with the Kettering Medical, the Kettering Health Network, and Premier Health Partners, and Dayton Children's on combining all of our clinics into a federally qualified health care center, what they call an FQHC. And so these clinics, along with Dayton Montgomery County Public Health, Greene County Public Health, will provide greater access to that primary care and preventative care. There'll be more doctors available, more slots available for people. And that's been an initiative that we've been working on for over 2.5, 3 years now with our various hospitals, doctors, and public health. So I think that's the thing. I think the thing that gets lost in the whole healthcare reform debate, the easy metric for politicians and for people to point at is the uninsured, is making sure people have coverage. Well, with healthcare reform, we're going to make sure people have coverage. But the other part of that equation, which is just as important, is if you have coverage and don't have access to a primary care physician or a specialist that you need, then the healthcare system's not working for you. It's still dysfunctional. And so there's a great emphasis here regionally and statewide and nationally on providing greater access for people to get into those medical homes and to have that ongoing preventative and wellness care.
The other story in the news this week is the announcement that Medicare claims database could be used to rate doctors. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this is just another initiative that is trying to get away from just paying doctors and paying hospitals and other healthcare providers for doing procedures. And what this will do is look at value-based purchasing, meaning that not only are you going to look at the procedures done by a doctor or a hospital, but you're going to look at the outcomes of that. Was the person readmitted? Was the person cured? Was there lower? What were the quality outcomes on that? And I think, you know, from our perspective at the Hospital Association, and I think as a patient also and as a father of children, you want to look at all those outcomes, and if you have more information out in the public for them to make healthcare decisions on, the better. And so, you know, we're very much in favor of anything where you have more information than less and having it sooner rather than later and having it more inclusive than exclusive. And I think this is just another thing that consumers can go and look at these rankings and these ratings and these outcomes when they're making healthcare decisions on who to see and what doctor to see and what procedure to have.
Is there any fear that this new system could complicate things or be abused in any way?
Well, there's always fear and change in any industry, and I think there is I wouldn't call it fear. I just think there's a high level of concern across the healthcare continuum, providers, patients. The healthcare reform bill that was passed, over half that bill hasn't been written yet. It's in the regulatory process. Those are rules that have to be written and implemented, and so you have a lot of people in the healthcare system, both providers and patients, operating in a system where you really don't know what the rules are today, tomorrow, 2 years from now, in 2014, when everything comes into effect. So I think this is just another initiative that's out there that you need to be aware of and you need to look at it. And patients are going to have to take a greater responsibility in making their healthcare decisions on who to see. This is just another ranking that they can look at. You can look at rankings of hospitals on the Ohio Department of Health's website at ohiohospitalcompare.com. There's additional information from CMS on the federal government website. This is just another data point that people can use to make their healthcare decisions.
All right. You participated in a forum with the League of Women Voters this past week?
Yes.
How did that go?
It went very well. There was a lot of discussion a year ago when healthcare reform was being debated, and we'd have town hall meetings of 100, 200, sometimes 300 people. You know, we had close to 50, 60 people at this forum in the middle of winter when healthcare is maybe not the number one topic of discussion going on right now in American politics. So there's a lot of interest in it, a lot of good questions, and unfortunately, I think with half that bill having been written yet, there's a lot more questions than answers. But I thought what was interesting thing of the forum is you had insurance companies represented there, you had doctors represented there, you had a Medicaid managed care company represented there with CareSource, you had hospitals there, and I think the common theme was is that everybody's going to have to work together, that you can't have these stovepipe institutions in the healthcare and make it work. You're going to have to be collaborative, you're going to have to work in partnership, and that includes working with the patients also.
Brian Bucklew, President and CEO of the Greater Dayton Area Hospital Association, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you.
This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Community Voices producer Caressa Brown brings us another local spoken word artist. This week, she speaks with Latessa Slate Williamson about the role of a poet in society, and Williamson shares her signature piece, Redemption.
What's being a poet mean to you?
Well, I think being a poet is not just being a performer or entertainer. I believe it's being an inner, I-N-N-E-R, tainer. It's very personal for me. You have to be, I believe, you should be the same person on stage that you are off stage. Anything you say, you should actually do. And we have a greater goal, a greater responsibility to the community. People say, like, you have rappers and singers that say that I'm not a role model. Well, I believe I am, because somebody is looking at me, watching me, and paying attention to what I'm doing and saying. So I think a poet is much more than just a performer or a writer.
What do you have to say about being a Black woman in today's times?
In today's times, I think it is very, very important that I set an example as a positive Black woman, a woman of strength, a woman of integrity, a woman of substance, wisdom, not only for my kids, because it's not only as a mother, not only as a parent, but because they'll look for a woman one day and they'll want a wife one day. And I would pray that they would look for someone who resembles their mother or behaves a certain way as their mother did. And then for the little girls that are out here, I don't think it's cute for them to be inspired by Nicki Minaj's way of dressing. Or I don't think it's cute for them to say, oh, well, I want to be a part of the Bad Wives, you know, the Basketball Wives or the Bad Girls Club. I don't think that that's a good look. Even though I don't have any daughters, I only have sons. I think I play a big role in setting an example.
What's Redemption about? Who is it directed to?
Redemption is, actually, it was for myself. It was for myself. It was like a call to action for me personally, because I always believed I could save the world, and I was told that I could not. And then I decided, yes, I could, one person at a time. If I help somebody or enlighten somebody or share some of my knowledge and wisdom with someone else, then maybe they'll share it with someone else, and we save the world one person at a time. With that said, I'd like to go into my signature piece entitled Redemption. And it goes, why are we victims of circumstance versus advocates for a change? Why do we continue to be abused by the systems of involuntary movement, which causes us to orbit a continuum of immobility? What good is life when all of humanity seems to be caught up in a whirlwind of an ever-evolving trend to live selfishly and then deny to be the creators of the plan and nullify the land in which we live, where Jehovah Jireh, Almighty Messiah, your Lord, our God, is no longer king? If you know what I mean. If I offend, well, I intend to. Therefore, justifying the doing of what you won't do. Now, it's not that we're not able, unwilling but not incapable of reclaiming what is rightfully ours and justly so. Who sells the 40 acres and then lets the mule go? In addition to these, we are planting the trees that dangle our seeds, rendering them lifeless. Our verdict is death. Sacrifice our sentence, still we forbade repentance. Endangering our very own lives, molesting our wives, excavating her purity with wicked, sick minds, then allowing addiction to endure blame. Have we no shame? Allowing our children, these little men and boys, to rape their futures with red-capped toys, letting them sit amongst the ignorance of our worthless lives, then shaking our fingers when their tongues become knives. If I offend again, I intend to. You can think what you want. I say the words you read every day, you can speak, but you don't. How soon we forget. How soon we forget about the ancestors of this place, the ones too weak to raise a fist but fought for your race. Was it to be first in line and get that self-gratification or maybe a piece of that capitalistic power of this misencumbered collaboration? Well, I think not. I have no pity for those who lack the words to speak the truth, for those who use their eldership to deprive the young ones of their youth. I refuse to accept ignorance as reason for your unkempt demeanor. Let's just have an intellectual conversation with profanities preener. Let's just converse as if you were tea and I'd be cup, and please just this once without using the phrase, so what's been up? Because obviously you know not. For a wolf in sheep's clothing would outstyle you, but it's that same materialism that has you do what you do. Why not escape that stereotypical? Why not let that go? Are you not able to walk away from that monetary plan that leaves you poor in spirit, meagerly rich in hand? What really causes you to believe in deceit and trickery? Because see, you thought you fooled me, but you're going to have to show me better than I can be told. And since you can't seem to find Webster, stick a pinky in my thought process and label this here a tester. Taste what living does to the human life. Gag upon the bitterness of the abundance of strife. Swallow success as I overcome, because what you think you can do to me, please look around. It's already been done. Let's be original for a moment. Record this here on wax. Write realism off as if it's been taxed. Let's just be true to self without thought of gain. Let's save the world without woe or strain. It's simple and easy to think outside of the box. You can pick out your fro, or better yet, twist up your locks. Let's tread earth's turf without thought of missing a step. Let's move on faith and trust in God's plan. Let's live in love by lending a hand. Not a dollar, no thoughts of return. Let's live the way our grandmamas taught us to learn. Let's reverse the roles of society through sole propriety. Let's become the owners of discipline. Let's reign and govern the golden rule. Let's put aside the textbooks and refer to the old school. How about we just go back? What is it that we lack? Is it self-love? Self-preservation? Well, how can you claim to be the fittest when you can barely even survive? And how can you claim to be living and you don't even feel alive? If you won't change, it will always present itself to you in the form of comfort, but you haven't got to accept it, because see, since we all have choices, you too can reject it. Now, I'll ask, is this what you expected? Nappy hair, dark circles adorning eyes, ever moist lips, always free from lies. I am being me just for me. Who are you? Better yet, are you free? It is now time for us to redeem ourselves. Please, let's do it intellectually. That's redemption.
For WYSO, I'm Caressa Brown.
You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. And very pleased to have once again joining me in studio, Nikki Dakota. Nikki, how are you?
Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for having me in. As music director, every month I go through the wave of incoming CDs, discs, musics for review and consideration, and pick one that particularly stands out for our CD of the month. And this time around, it is such a delight to be able to offer, it's called The Lost Notebooks of Hank Williams. Although Jimmy Rogers is widely considered to be the father of country music, what Hank Williams himself contributed is almost immeasurable. He's called the Hillbilly Shakespeare, among other things. He died almost 60 years ago. It was either on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, 1952, going into 1953, and at only 29 years of age, by the way, so young.
Wow.
But he left behind stacks of notebooks of just lyrics, no music whatsoever. And those were all sent upon his death to his publishing company, Acuff Rose, who have given us some of the finest songs that we can probably all sing the choruses to in the history of music making. So now, yay, these many, almost 60 years later, they're opening up these boxes and these notebooks. And this was a project spearheaded by Bob Dylan, who was hugely influenced by Hank Williams. And these tunes that lay mute for all this time have been so beautifully, tenderly put into the hands and songcraft of 12 different artists who we love. Many of these are just straight country. Of course, he was a huge country music star, but some of them have a little play in the wheel as well. It's everyone from Alan Jackson to Nora Jones, Jack White's on here, Lucinda Williams, Patti Loveless, Levon Helm, Holly Williams, who's his great-granddaughter, singing with her father, Bocephus, and I should say her grandfather. And it's just a lovely collection. I was hoping we could listen to some of the Bob Dylan. This is the second track on here. It's The Love That Faded.
The love that faded left me only tears. Days that were happy turned into lonely years. Vows that we made turned into lies. My life life is empty, my lonely heart cries. I tried to forget that we'll never be. Nothing left for me but just a memory. My way is lonely without you, I'm lost. My love was wasted, I'm paying the cost. Brown eyes, blue eyes, they're all the same. None are for me, I've lost the game. Tomorrow hurts nothing but worries and cares. The love that faded left me only tears.
Nikki, isn't it a great thing when these treasures from the past come out into the open, there's a new light shed on them, and they're here for listeners today?
It's absolutely fabulous. Of course, they've been doing this with the Woody Guthrie archives for a while. Several people have been allowed to go into these notebooks, these shoe boxes full of scraps of paper from hotels or just whatever was at hand that songwriters write down their inspiration. And it's a delight. It's a gift from the past. And this album certainly falls in that category. It's just an amazing record, rich from beginning to end. I was hoping we could also hear a little bit maybe of Blue Is My Heart, his great-granddaughter Holly Williams singing with her grandpa, Hank Jr., Bocephus, on this one. It's just beautiful.
Blue is my heart, blue as the sky. Memories of you, they're making me cry. Longing days don't go by. Blue is my heart, blue as the sky. Life is so bare since you said goodbye. There's no tomorrow, so why should I try? Joys of this life, they're passing me by. Blue is my heart, blue as the sky.
One from our CD of the month. It is a collection of 12 tunes by various artists that all put their craft onto the heretofore unsung songs of Hank Williams, the sort of stepfather of country music, the Hillbilly Shakespeare, and our CD of the month. You can become a member of this public radio station. Get a copy of this great, great, great book that comes with it, by the way. Really nice liner notes, really helpful and thoughtful context for this American icon's life and work. You can do all of these things, have your own copy and a member card when you go to our website. And you just have to type wyso.org, become a member, makes a great gift. I'm just saying, great gift. And a little stocking stuffer for your public radio station.
And if they support us today, they can get these by Christmas, in theory?
Yes. So do it now. It's well worth it. I think you'll be delighted.
WISO Music Director Nikki Dakota. Nikki, thanks for your time.
Jerry, as always, a pleasure.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of early winter. My diaries have become timetables, lists of annual events in nature. The obsession with detail is sufficient in itself. It's a peaceful neurosis of record-taking. But I often think the notebooks ought to be useful for something other than just tracking the seasons. I've had plenty of practice at taking notes. My former work in academe promoted the illusion that individual, unconnected pieces of information all have their places in a grand context of history. So it's not unusual for me to feel, for example, that, say, the length of comfrey leaves on April 16th of a given year should somehow hold significance. In fact, the size of my comfrey on that day in 1983 was 8 inches. The following year, after a very cold spring, it was only 2 inches. In 1985, it was 6 inches. In 1986, 9 inches. This past year, 7 inches. Well, it's true that the length of a comfrey leaf, like the state of any leaf, can measure the quality of time as precisely as a scientific instrument. And that ought to provide rationale enough for anyone who feels the need to measure leaves. But for me, there's more. I think it comes from growing up with the old Catholic notion of indulgences. I miss indulgences. I miss being able to say a few magical, power-laden words and in seconds create ultimate meaning with ultimate practical application in heaven. These days, indulgences are quite out of favor, but I just keep writing things down. My notes, I realize, seem to carry few matters of ultimate concern. On the other hand, even though they may not get me a higher place in heaven, little by little they are helping me figure out where I am on earth. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of early winter. In the meantime, take a few notes. Notice a few things. Check out your place on earth.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WISO.org.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend. Thanks to all of our guests. Before we leave you, here's Sarah Buckingham with a preview of tonight's documentary hour.
Tune in tonight at 6 p.m. for the final installment of the 2011 Third Coast Festival broadcast, The Best of the Best. We'll hear about a chance encounter in a music shop that led to an enduring friendship and a lot of dancing. Plus, Marianne McCune, winner of the Best News Feature Award, reports on immigration fraud in a story called Deportations Before Reform, Anatomy of an Immigration Bust. And the Gold Award winner, the Best Audio Doc of the Year, The Wisdom of Jay Thunderbolt by Nick Vanderkolk and Brendan Baker. It's the story of a mysterious man whose business card reads simply Thunderbolt, Party Naked. That's on part two of The Best of the Best, winners of the Third Coast International Audio Festival, tonight at 6 p.m. Then at 11 p.m., it's the Moth Radio Hour. In tonight's episode, a high school quarterback leaves Montana as a promising son and returns years later to reveal a shocking secret. A boy from Sierra Leone describes his transformation from innocent child to cold-hearted soldier. A family parrot redefines the pecking order. and a construction worker discovers the upside of his girlfriend's one-year prison sentence. Coming up tonight on the Moth Radio Hour.
Coming up next on member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, The Book Nook.
This week, we meet with two artful improvisers. Baylor Fleck joins us for a conversation about the banjo in bluegrass, jazz, and classical. Then we'll go for a jazz breakdown with New Orleans percussionist Jason Marsalis, plus music from Jerry Garcia, Patsy Cline, and Slim Gaylock. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
This afternoon at 2 on member-supported 91.3 WYSO.
I'm Heather Martin, chair of the WYSO Resource Board, and I'll make this simple. Our annual silent auction is coming up on February 11th, and you need to be there. There will be cool stuff like local art and gift cards to buy, fine wine to sample, and sweet cupcakes to taste. And we're holding it at a fabulous new venue in Springfield, the Hollenbeck Bailey Creative Arts and Conference Center. So log on to WYSO.org for more details, and I'll see you at the auction.